Hello, and welcome back to the Future Car Podcast. I'm your new co-host, Connor Pike. In the coming weeks, along with Ed's fascinating interviews, you will have the opportunity to hear from Nand Kochhar, VP of Automotive and Transportation Industries for Siemens Digital Industry Software. Nand and I will examine how the macro trends of electrification and autonomy are reshaping the automotive and transportation industries today, and how these trends can impact the industry moving forward. So to kick it off, we focus on the state of the industry today as it undergoes a once-in-a-generation transformation. So without any further ado, please enjoy our conversation. So I'd just like to say welcome to Nand, and maybe we can start off with just a little bit of background about who you are, where you come from, what your experience is in the industry.
Thank you, Connor. As you said, my name is Nand Kochhar. I joined Siemens in early part of 2020 as Vice President of Automotive and Transportation Industry. A majority of my career has been working in the auto industry, nearly 30 years at Ford Motor Company. I have had the opportunity to work in the U.S. In the Dearborn area in the Metro Detroit. Also had the opportunity to work as an expat in Germany, in Ford of Germany. Our design centers both in the Merkenich in the Cologne area as well as other parts of Europe. At that point, some of our facilities in U.K., and the product we launched was in Belgium, so I had the opportunity to work across various countries.
So then over this long and diverse career that you've had the pleasure of experiencing, just curious what the most significant changes you've seen so far?
Obviously, 30 years is a long time. Several changes. I would say the most important one in the early days of globalization. Automotive industry is global, but we saw a significant change coming through a lot of the emerging markets at that time and popping up. So the countries like China, India, becoming a significant players in the automotive industry. Throughout my career, I've seen changes going from making our traditional powertrains and the gasoline and the diesel powertrains. How do we make overall product more efficient? Continuous pressure of delivering cost and innovations. But lately, the biggest changes I've seen coming through the technology trends, as well as the trends in the automotive industry, which are going towards the autonomous vehicle and the consumer demands coming in for electrification and things of that nature. Those are some of the significant changes I've seen in my career.
Could you compare and contrast sort of those long-term changes with what we've been experiencing the last few months?
We're referring to the disruptions caused by COVID. One of the changes I didn't touch on before was also going on about the digital transformation. That's been a journey companies have started. The disruptions, which we recently experienced in the industry, really highlighted the importance of that digital transformation. The companies which were on a path of that transformation were able to handle those disruptions a lot better than the companies who were not on a path or had just recently started on that journey, had to struggle quite a bit handling those disruptions.
That's interesting. I'm wondering if we could dive into that a little bit and maybe relate it to how traditional automotive companies are remaining competitive in this kind of changing landscape and the specifics on why digital transformation has helped certain companies thrive where others have struggled.
So the fundamental thing in digital transformation is what's called digital thread. That is the information thread from all the way from concepts into product development, getting into manufacturing and into the service lifecycle management. Once you have that, obviously, you're giving access to that information and you combine that with all the other technologies from telecommunications standpoint and the connectivity standpoint, then you have a workforce which is able to work and influence the continuation of the product development in a manner that these disruptions caused and the safety issues caused by COVID were able to address from remote locations. Of course, there's a whole manufacturing aspect of it. You still need people in your plants. But if you have a digital transformation journey, as a foundation, then you're able to switch things and play all those scenarios, how to make things safe. As an example, in a factory, when the workflow is happening, now you had to redo some of those from keeping the social distancing of certain distance apart. So that means you have to reconfigure the factory setup. And if you were on a digital platform already, it allowed companies to adapt to that very quickly versus not having that setup as a foundation.
I'm curious, do you think smaller or startup companies have some sort of an advantage in this case where it might be easier for them to adopt those changes quickly versus a larger OEM?
Yes, to some extent, you could say it's not necessarily just the size, of course, of a smaller organization. It's also how their footprint is, a global versus local. And in today's environment, hardly there's anything which is that locally contained that you don't have to interact with the world. I think when it comes to the globalization, then the challenge is the same, whether it's a small business or a medium-sized business or a large business. The whole automotive space is very well connected from a business standpoint, and it is global in nature, the way things are today.
So even small companies are operating on a global scale nowadays.
Most of them, a lot of them, I would say, is from, if you look at from a raw material supply to all the way finished product and selling that product, there's a lot of details which go behind, even for smaller businesses.
Very interesting. And that brings on to another trend we've been seeing, which is companies in a bid to sort of accelerate their transformation or accelerate their adoption of new technologies, they're starting to partner together, even between major manufacturers such as Volkswagen and Ford, we know, announced a partnership around electric vehicles not too long ago. So I'm curious what you see as the benefits to this approach, or if there are other good examples that you can share of these partnerships.
Some of these changes which are going on are the trends. They're so huge. They're so complex. That is the number one thing I want to communicate. That's what causes people to think that if they need to be successful, they can't do everything on their own. No one can do all aspects of product development, delivery, and the service. And technology is changing so fast as well. And those are the kind of things which lead into partnerships. And there's all kinds of partnerships, as you mentioned, a couple examples. But these are popping up almost every day, every month, and you see a new one. So the latest one, let's say Hyundai partnering with Aptiv. So there's a technology company which is going to provide for autonomous vehicle, and Hyundai, being a traditional automotive company, partnering that they can address the challenges of, let's say, creating an autonomous vehicle. So the partnerships are happening, a large existing OEM, another OEM, plus the technology company. Others are happening just between two partners, a software technology company working with an auto OEM. And the third level, you could say, is a tier one, tier twos partnering with an OEM. So you see that lot of, so to say, consolidation, partnerships, all those kind of things happening. And that's all in the spirit of how can we deliver the most innovative product for our customers, which they care for and which they're willing to pay for.
I wonder if you could comment on the kind of emergence of even non-traditional automotive companies and becoming a role in these partnerships. So, for example, Amazon, I believe, invested in Rivian, the electric truck startup.
One thing is very clear. The automotive industry is a good place to be in, and it is a very important business from a consumer standpoint in different shapes and forms. It's changing, but at the end of the day, every country is at a country level making sure that they have a very successful and flourishing automotive industry. So with that kind of thing in mind, when software companies are looking at, they have generated enough revenue, enough capital from their software business, how do they diversify? Where do they need to go for next level of business growth? And they've been migrating towards the automotive business. the examples you used, Amazon has got its own business, and of course they've got a vested interest. Their partnerships in the spirit, one from a technology perspective, they could work with the automotive industry and, let's say, bring in their technologies into the for example, they have AWS, which is the cloud solutions coming from Amazon. So it's good to have a partner from that perspective. On the other hand, they've also given in their partnership an order for generating electric vehicles specifically for Amazon delivery. So now it's one of those creating your own vertical channel of being an automotive company and using that product. So it all makes sense from a business perspective. And there's several examples. You brought up one good one, but there are several scenarios of these type of partnerships.
So do you think it will accelerate our development of autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles and such, or are the challenges still pretty significant?
On the acceleration front, I started to look at electrification is already at a full speed. Obviously, everyone is familiar with companies which are just focused on electrified products only. You mentioned Rivian, the new one, but Tesla as the example used by almost everyone in several cases. So the electrification trend is on the go, on the move, and is continuing to grow. And of course, just like any other technology, when it comes with its own challenges. And those challenges are the ones which need to be addressed, which are being addressed. And as you move forward, there'll be new challenges, which you and I have not even thought about when you switch into those new modes of transportation. Same thing is going on the autonomous front. Autonomous gets even more interesting because you have part of autonomous, which is the ADAS part of it. That is the level one and two of autonomy. And that is already happening today. Over the last several years, there's been significant progress in that. You look at any major OEMs, they will be offering features related to those advanced driver assist systems, whether they could be in autonomous emergency braking, or it could be adaptive cruise control. All those functions are happening in those vehicles today.
I'm curious about electrification in particular, since that is, as you said, it's really in at full speed now. And I think even, at least for the public 5 years ago, it didn't seem like something that was likely to happen. So I'm curious what you see has changed for electric vehicle development, maybe how the development push has changed over time, and then something, if there's anything that's new right now in electric vehicles.
Yeah, so the electrification has been maturing. One of the big thing in electrification has always been or was, and which is getting addressed, was the range anxiety. So when you tell someone you're switching from a gasoline-based vehicles, those powertrains into electric, first thing comes to mind is, I drive 400 miles or 500 miles to make a trip to go out of town. What am I going to do? So range anxiety is being addressed through several different things. Number one comes as an example, the infrastructure setup, to have ability to charge if I'm traveling longer distances. Second thing is, how long does it take to charge? So those are some of the two, so to say, high-level examples which are being addressed, which have progressed over the last few years. And that's why now you see more and more popularity, consumer feeling comfortable. Alongside, whenever a new technology comes, initially it's always very expensive. When you start building the volumes, the cost part of the equation starts to get addressed. So the cost of some of these things have been coming down as well. For example, the power pack or the battery cost. And those are some of the things which cause these trends to become more real or have a great progress from last 5 years to today.
And infrastructure also plays a role, doesn't it? The charging points available?
Yes, infrastructure plays a big role, especially both infrastructure at home for charging overnight and quickly, infrastructure to the office and the local malls where you might drive your vehicles, having ability to charge at any of those locations during a time when the charging times are or long, and then infrastructure, especially on a longer drive, that makes a big that today, instead of a gas station at every few miles, at every corner in a city environment, that you will need a infrastructure for charging, which is the new fuel, replacing the gasolines as an example.
Adds a new dynamic to planning a Western United States road trip. When you think about, is there going to be a charging point available out in the middle of Wyoming or Colorado, for example?
That's right. So today you could see in the West Coast, there's a little bit of that infrastructure was built, and that you'll see the growth of electric vehicle usage more and more in that part of the United States. And slowly it's growing. We all here in Detroit, making trips from Detroit to Chicago, which is a good weekend trip for a lot of people, having infrastructure in between. As we grow that, that just increases the comfort level of people driving from one city to the other.
I know I've seen advertised here in Oregon where I live, they have electric byways, which are specific routes that they have kind of determined that there are enough charging points around so you can take a road trip with your electric vehicle and be confident that there are charging stations available for you. So it's an interesting way to kind of get consumers comfortable with the idea of taking a long trip in an EV.
I think that goes back to the comment I made about range anxiety. It's getting that anxiety out of the customers to feel more comfortable. It doesn't happen overnight. So it's a combination of city, governments, industry, policymakers all coming together and setting up this infrastructure. And obviously the private companies, both on the automotive side and they could be the new companies getting into those businesses. The point is making customers more comfortable with it so we can that industry can grow more and more. That is making good progress. That's how I will characterize today. As an engineer, we always know there's a next opportunity because you're never satisfied with the level of performance you have. So one of the aspects in there is the total user experience of an electric vehicle, and that will continue to mature with more and more technologies coming into that. And the other thing I touched on in the opening is the cost aspect of it, right? So it's both the cost, the initial cost of the product. As the volumes grow, that will continue to grow. The usage of the battery packs in the vehicles, and that will that's a challenge on an ongoing basis. Cost is a big challenge in the industry today, where we've been working for the last 100 plus years. Cost is always a big challenge, and then I think the electrification journey, the unique parts in that, whether it's electric motors, batteries, packs, et cetera, and the manufacturing operations around those, they will start their journey, how to be more efficient from a cost perspective, as well as getting more mileage out of the given setup, which is the range part of it. So that's a big challenge. Other big challenge, which will continue to come, is the how do we go after end of life or the recycling of the unique things which are coming in the electric vehicles? That's still will need to, a lot of advances that will need to happen. That's a challenge which is going to stay in front of the industry. And then obviously the raw materials coming into making these electrification, that always needs to be monitored as well. That how's that maturing and what countries, what specific things are needed for that. So it's the entire supply chain. I think there's plenty of challenges for next few decades for us to continue to evolve and make things more efficient.
Yes, efficiency seems like a common theme in some of those challenges between production, the raw material development, and then, of course, the vehicles themselves.
That's right. I mean, I always look at it that we've been, as I said, designing, manufacturing, building, selling vehicles for 100 plus years. There's not a single auto company I'm aware of who could say, yeah, I'm all set. This is, I'm efficient. We are constantly looking for opportunities. How do we continue to make our current businesses, which have been there for so long, more efficient, more better, and so on? So I think the electrification, autonomous, they are just getting on that journey as well. And that challenge will always be there.
The automotive and transportation industry is in the middle of its largest transformation in decades. External pressures such as changing consumer preferences, regulations, and so on are driving forces behind this disruption. But internal pressures play an equally significant role. The drive for new business models, improved vehicle development processes, and, of course, the pursuit of cutting-edge vehicle technologies each are contributing to the reshaping of a 100-year-old industry. We really can't wait to see where it goes. Thank you for joining us on The Future Car. Up next, Nanda and I are going to take a closer look at vehicle electrification and how it has come to the precipice of true mainstream success. So thanks again for listening, and we look forward to joining you back next time.